realize it's 7:30 and I haven't had my dinner?
What I was doing is far more important than eating.
At my age, nothing's more important than eating.
I realize it'll sound very strange to you, but last night I had rather a terrifying experience.
I'll be in my room with the door locked. And if anyone thinks of murdering me, I'm warning them. I sleep with a gun under my pillow.
Well, I'll go then. Well, hello there, and welcome to All the Best Lines.
I am Smokey, and over there is Adam.
Hello there, welcome to All the Best Lines. I'm Adam, and over there is Smokey.
Fair enough. We said we weren't going to fight over the intro anymore, so...
Hello there, I'm Smokey, and this is All the Best Lines, and over there is Adam.
Oh, now that would be weird. Be like some weird kind of Freaky Friday type situation.
Hello there. I'm All the Best Lines, and over there is Smokey.
How many more have you got?
Goodbye there. I'm Hello, and this is All the Best Lines. I don't know. I can't think of any more combinations.
Best the all.
I'm slightly addled. Hello there. This is Rated H. I'm Ben Taylorson.
Oh!
And over there is Smokey. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Attaboy Clarence.
Hey, that's better. Hey.
Yeah, welcome to Attaboy Clarence. Let's talk about Hercule Poirot.
Nice to be back, isn't it? And also, nice to be talking about Universal Horror. And what a film.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I didn't probably twig in my head that it, well, whether this was the film to do it with, but I thought we should talk about a film better for Lon Chaney Jr. than The Black Sleep. So,
is it?
We'll get there. represents his acting ability a bit more.
Does it? I'll tell you what it does do.
Oh, come on.
It
makes better the than case Mungo.
For the abolition of moustaches. I thought that again.
Okay. Not a fan of the facial hair?
I'm not a fan of Lon Chaney Jr.'s facial hair in this. I think he's all moustache. I was going to say an acting moustache, but I don't even think I can call it that.
Fair enough.
Just like a moustache. He's like a moustache who crawls around the screen saying things. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves because, you know, I don't want to give any kind of opinion away. We're going to be talking today about 1945 masterpiece, Pillow of Death.
we really are.
A film in which the title plays a heavy part in the appeal.
we will. Yes, it does. I can't deny that. And we will get to that in just a moment. But something I would just like to bring up before we get to the film is something that I know you gleefully enjoy mocking me over, which I've brought up before, is when we chart high unexpectedly in a random country.
There are no such thing as random countries.
All right, randomly chart high in a country.
There we go, that's better.
Okay. For the last, I would say, about 10 days, and I haven't told you this privately, I wanted to save it for when we recorded. For about the last 10 days, we have been riding the crest of a wave in Lithuania.
First and only time that sentence has ever been used. Okay, tell me all about it.
Well, I just happened to notice when the... As I say, it was
how do you just happen to notice the Lithuanian podcast charts?
I receive a daily email telling me...
There we are.
Which I do for all three of my shows.
Okay.
Yep. So, one of the emails that I received... it was over a week ago, and... and we were, I think we were fourth for TV and film and movie reviews in Lithuania. And I thought, well, that's random. I'm not quite sure why that's happened. And then I've just been watching it over the last week or so. And we have not left the top 20 in all of that time. So
What an achievement. I'm
very pleased.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Me too, yeah. I just can't believe it.
I knew I had to tell you with witnesses.
I just can't believe it. It's
hey, look, no, I'm not saying it's a world-beating thing. I'm just saying it's a nice thing.
100%. I'm totally agreeing with you. I've never been happier. I'm absolutely over the moon.
Yeah. I honestly don't know anything about Lithuania, but I'm sure it's a lovely place.
It is a lovely place.
Have you been there?
No. But
you're looking it up now, aren't you?
Not at all. I know it lies on the eastern shore of the Baltic Sea and borders Latvia to the north, Belarus to the east and south, Poland to the south, and Russia to the southwest. So there's your answer.
My answer to what?
Your answer to what are the major cities? Kaunas, Klaipeda, Panevėžys. And I also know about Lithuania that they belong to the ethno-linguistic group of the Balts and speak Lithuanian. One of only a few living members. Hang on, let me read that. Say that again properly. One of only a few living members of the Baltic branch of the Indo-European language family.
Wow.
Unlike you, I know all about Lithuania. Did you know, for instance, that for millennia, the southeastern shores of the Baltic Sea were inhabited by various Baltic tribes? But in the 1230s, Lithuanian lands were united for the first time by Mindaugas, who formed the Kingdom of Lithuania on 6th of July, 1253. All right? So when you talk about podcast charts, always bring up Lithuania first.
There you go.
Thank you.
My word, what a rich and varied history they have.
Oh, it's not that varied. No, but I can give you some more. The history of Lithuania dates back to settlements founded around 10,000 years ago.
Wow. Blimey. It's been around.
It has, yeah. Do you know that Baltic amber was once a valuable trade resource?
I did. I actually knew that.
Yes, no, well, who doesn't know that?
Who doesn't? Wow. You could go on Mastermind with your specialist subject being Lithuania.
As long as I've got an iPad next to me, I'll go on anything.
But now they need to add to that blurb that you just read. Are big fans of All the Best Lines.
Yes. In 2024, in the podcast charts for Lithuania, All the Best Lines, a podcast featuring Adam and Smokey, barely left the top 20. That's
for
what it's going to be for a whole week. Is it gone now?
No, it's still there.
It's at what number are we at the moment?
Oh, let me find it out for you. I can do this in real time. Oh, in fact, I got the email while we've been recording 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
So let's find out where we are. Oh, no, we've slipped out. We're number 27.
Oh, no. 27 in Lithuania, where the white stork is the national bird.
Yes, that's the one.
Oh, damn it.
But that's in film reviews. We're still in the TV and film one as well, but we've dropped very far down in that one. But in film reviews, we're still very high.
As we should.
Yeah. And if you want to know, apparently we're currently number 157 in Sweden as well.
No, that doesn't surprise me at all. Sweden, home of ABBA.
Mamma Mia. I was just going to say, you as an ABBA fan, Mamma Mia. That's going to make you happy, isn't it?
It does, yeah. Did you know that Sweden's been inhabited since prehistoric times? Circa 12,000 BC.
Yeah. Agnetha was around then, wasn't she?
She's always been
around. That was very harsh, wasn't it? I apologize.
Yeah. You're horrible to Agnetha.
I am. I don't know why. It was just the first name that came to my head. I guess because it's the first A in ABBA. Mamma Mia. I guess. So.
Is it, or is it the fourth A? Or second A? Should we say? There aren't four A's.
The fourth A. You mean the fourth letter?
The fourth alphanumerical character is what I meant.
Yeah. I honestly don't know. You're asking the wrong person.
Why? Don't you?
Because I know nothing about that band.
What? You don't know anything about ABBA? Mamma Mia. What are you talking about? Did you not know that they're a pop supergroup formed in 1972
supergroup is in quotes, isn't it? I mean, it's just a band. Supergroup is like the Traveling Wilburys. You know what I mean? It's not ABBA. Mamma
Mia. But listen, during the band's main active years, it consisted of two married couples.
What's Tony Fleetwood Mac?
Yeah, they weren't married, were they? Christine McVie and John McVie.
John McVie. Yeah, and Stevie and Lindsay weren't they?
No.
Well, they were just together. They weren't married.
I think they were together. I think Stevie got with Mick Fleetwood for a while as well, and then
they were all shagging each other.
Yeah, I mean,
every one of them.
And God bless them for it, doing what they want to follow in their heart's desire. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, honestly.
Well, they did. Yeah. They said Rumours was the album that Cocaine built, didn't they? So it should have just been the album that Cocaine and copious shagging built. I think. Sounds like a hell of a time, though, doesn't it?
It really
was. Yeah.
Not sounds like these days.
Oh. Podcasting, cocaine, and copious shagging. Oh, that
all
was
the best
what it was
lines
like during COVID,
wasn't it? I'm assuming that no one's gotten in touch.
No, sadly not. That's why we're talking about Lithuania.
What? That's not why we're talking about Lithuania. We're talking about it because... Hang on.
Well, actually, I will say we won't say their name, but you did send me a lovely message that you had received
yes.
of someone who was going through all of our lines and really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So thank you to that person. So that was very nice of them to say.
Yeah,
so,
and that person
so we
is,
have been someone has been.
Yes, if that person is listening, he knows who he is, and he is a signee up to my Patreon, and I've asked
hang
him
on. Whoa.
A signee up E.
A signee up E.
Mm-hmm. Sign up E. To my Patreon. Yeah, so yeah, that's the Lithuanian word for it. But he is. I've been speaking to him, and he.
Yeah.
I said to him he should come on the show because he obviously an old film lover. Yeah. And Smokey and I would cordially like to invite you onto the show. Isn't that right, Smokey?
Damn right, my friend. So, absolutely. Yes. More than welcome.
Invite heading away. We'll sort out a date for that soon. That's going to be a lot of fun. As is absolutely. the fact that Lithuanian is a Baltic language written in an adapted version of the Roman script. But enough about Lithuania. Shall we talk about Lon Chaney Jr., which is almost the same word, if you think about it. Should we call him Lithuania Jr.? No, that's not. This is very annoying now.
Lon Chaney Jr.
Lon Chaney Jr.
God, that's enough to break your brain, that. Like, really trying to merge them together. There'll be like some like English literature scholar out there who can mash those two together perfectly and come out with something amazing. But we can't do that. We're too many drinks in, and we're not prepared.
I wonder what the national drink of Lithuania is.
Oh, fuck's sake.
You carry on. I'll find out.
I'll talk amongst myself. Yeah. So last episode. Oh, you found it. What is the national drink?
Oh, I'm just reading about the cuisine. Shh. Go on. Give him a peek behind the curtain. Did you know?
Last episode.
The Lithuanian cuisine features barley, potatoes, rye, beets, greens, berries, and mushrooms. Yes.
Can you do that in an air fryer?
And it's long-lasting beer brewing traditions.
Oh, of course.
It sounds like the place to go to. Should we start our world tour at Lithuania?
Damn. Well, it sounds like we certainly got the audience for it.
It would be Beatlemania at that airport, wouldn't it? Because we were in the top 20 of the podcast charts for under a week.
Yep. Yeah. Well, no, it technically was over a week, but yeah, we're not anymore. Yeah, but sadly, I'd be the only one to, you know, properly take advantage of the All the Best Lions mania because, you know, I'm a single man and you're not.
Very true.
Sorry. Yes.
But almost makes me more exciting, doesn't it? And more of a challenge.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Or,
and now I need to go and get married.
Exactly. Yeah. Or hang on a minute. Wait a second. Let me just do something.
Oh God.
Makes me more of a challenge. Or in Lithuanian, an isukis. Okay.
An isukis.
Yes.
Okay. You are the perfect example of an isukis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And this show is very isukising. To make
it really is, especially when we've going on like this, and I'm editing. Last episode.
This show would be so tight if I was editing, by the way.
You.
We'd be finished by now. Anyway, Smokey's editing. We don't mind. Come on.
Oh, you've got me joking. If you had been editing this, there would have been bloody God knows how many Mamma Mia stings about 5 minutes ago.
What? That we all the just avatar. Gone,
do you know what? Yeah, we all would have just turned off by then.
Yep.
Anyway, last episode.
Yes, yes, go on.
I gave Adam his usual two choices. One was a film that he had previously thought of, or a Smoky Surprise, and he went for the Smoky Surprise. And it was literally, because of Adam's wonderful Universe of Horrors show that he did a few years back, the title of this film had always stuck in my head. And I'd never watched it, never got around to watching it. And I just thought, you know what? It's time. It's time for Pillow of Death.
Yes.
And, yeah. And so your reaction in the last episode was wonderful, by the way, when you realised I was talking about Pillow of Death.
It was like, oh my God, you're talking about Pillow of Death. I haven't thought about that film for years. And it's like, you know, I totally remember when I was writing that series, I can't believe there's a film called Pillow of Death. This has got to be the greatest film of all time. Unfortunately, it isn't. But, I mean,
there's no Brighton Strangler.
It definitely has its merits, let's just say that. Yeah, it's no Brighton Strangler. It's no Devil Doll. But, yes, Pillow of Death. I think we can all agree, regardless of what happens in the film, that is one hell of a title.
God, isn't it just? Isn't it just? I was showing some colleagues at work the poster. And and the kids, they're kids, and they're going, oh, that's sick. And I'm like, is it? And I don't know what that means, but I was just sort of like, okay, yeah. And they're like, so it's like a possessed pillow. And I'm like, you'd think so.
You'd hope so.
You really would think, oh, yeah. And hope so, yeah.
Yeah, you'd want it to be.
Before we properly dive into it, and I did like, by the way, and I was about to say I'm not going to, but I am going to take full credit, is that after we recorded the last episode and I said, I've just made your choice for you of what the films that were going into your movie library were going to be that week, and you kind of brushed it away, and lo and behold, what was the films that week?
I put all six Inner Sanctum films into my classic movie library. So if you're signed up at my Patreon, at patreon.com/attaboysecret, then yes, there isn't even an Inner Sanctum collection at the bottom. So if you just want to watch the Inner Sanctum Six, I think I know you don't come to film club anymore, but I think we should definitely do a film club special week.
I'm on hiatus.
Yeah, sure. But I think what what we should do is have an Inner Sanctum week where we double bill two of the six and just get everyone to pick.
That's
and
a cracking idea.
I think, and afterwards, me and you should host a Zoom quiz where it's Inner Sanctum based or horror based, Universal horror based, because that'd be good fun.
Sign me up.
We'll do that.
I'm up for that, mate. That sounds absolutely awesome. But I'm glad you say that, though, is that the ethos of the very beginning of All the Best Lines was obviously me being the novice and you being the expert. But obviously it was a little bit of a window for other Golden Age cinema novices to learn as well, which I always want this show to be. So I'm going to include myself as one of these. I know a little bit of, obviously, after listening to your shows. But for the uninitiated, can you just go into a little bit about what The Inner Sanctum is?
The Inner Sanctum was a radio series, began right back in, I think it was the 30s, might have been the 40s. Anyway, it was very
formative. I know I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's fine. I'm trying to recall. It started with this creaking door sound effect, and it was very atmospheric. Kids loved it. One of Bob Dylan's earliest memories is that he used to crawl under the sheets and listen to Inner Sanctum radio plays. They were always, really scary stuff, and it just inspired him to become a storyteller himself, which is, one of these great little asides you get from old-time radio, how they inspire people.
Yeah.
So it was a horror series, anthology series. Generally turned out, you get this supernatural beginning to a story, and it would turn out to not be supernatural. That was always its hook, Occasionally, it would turn out to be a supernatural solution, but most of the time it was someone playing as a ghost to get someone to have a heart attack so they collect their will, that kind of thing. And it was great, and Universal Horror in the 40s were always trying to find new ways of bringing in the horror crowd who would turn up for anything. So they commissioned this thing, the Inner Sanctum film series. They all starred Lon Chaney Jr., and the hook was the Inner Sanctum on film would be you seeing into the mind of Lon Chaney as he makes his way through the story. So the first one, I think, was Calling Dr. Death, and it was about a doctor whose wife is murdered. And every now and then you get this whispery sort of inner monologue, and it would be Lon Chaney's character talking about how he's feeling about being, you know, interrogated by the police, or how he's feeling about being accused of the crime, or that kind of thing.
I remember you putting clips of that in your show as well. You can hear that whisper in your ear when he's doing it. Yeah, that's cool.
It's really annoying. And I think it, I think it required an actor of, I like Lon Chaney Jr., but I think he's more physical than cerebral. Yeah, and I think he's great as the Wolfman and stuff, but when it comes to playing an intellectual, in all of these films, it required more of an intellectual performance, and he either plays a psychiatrist or a lawyer or a doctor or something like that, and you just, I find it hard to buy him as that kind of thing. That said, he's not bad in it, and
mate, you're allowed personal opinion.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I mean, I don't really like him as Son of Dracula. I just think he's great when he's out punching things and leaping on things and sort of lunging at things. He's great. When it comes to playing the studious type, I'm not sure these films suited him. I think Claude Rains in the...
So it's a bit like The Rock.
Yeah, it's like putting The Rock... yeah, like, you know... A Noah Baumbach film or something, which would be really interesting.
It's like, right, so it's like you don't want The Rock playing the Robin Williams part in Dead Poets Society, do you? Mm. You want him punching and lunging and hitting.
Exactly. You want him leaping from things.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. So Pillow of, the Inner Sanctum films, I think, would have been better with someone a bit more intellectually sensitive, shall we say. I think Leslie Howard, Claude Rains, all of these kinds of people would have been fantastic in Karloff. The Sanctum. Yeah, Karloff would have been great. Yeah, because he has that capacity. But they chose Lon Chaney Jr., and we have six films. He plays a central character in all of them. Pillow of Death's the last one. Now, spoiler alert, in every single one of the Inner Sanctum films, Calling Dr. Death, you got Strange Confession, Weird Woman, all of these films, they all begin with some kind of mystery. And everyone thinks Lon Chaney is the culprit. And he spends the whole film inner monologuing his way through how he's feeling and, oh no, they suspect me. Oh, this is such a dark thing to have happened to me. All this kind of thing. Always turns out at the end, there's no supernatural solution. It was just someone setting up, framing him or something like that. Pillow of Death for me is a not great film, but I like the fact that they went, it's the last one. Let's really do something crazy. We can get into what happens later on in the film, but
sure,
I like it for that.
Yeah,
a very long answer. But
no, that's absolutely perfect answer. So your suggestion of us, watching a few of these, but he's in them all, but they're not connected stories. They're all separate stories.
It's an anthology series, all starring Lon Chaney Jr. All different stories. He plays all different characters. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, because, yeah, if there was some kind of continuity, we couldn't do them in a random order, but...
The hook is, the Inner Sanctum is the mind, and you're getting to see... Yeah. It's like Peep Show. You remember that sitcom where you get to see from their eyes? In Inner Sanctum films, it begins with this weird face in a globe, and it goes, ooh, you're about to hear the story of a doctor whose wife... This is the only film that doesn't have that beginning, by the way. And then all the way through the film, Lon Chaney is either a doctor or a professor or something like that, and he is thrown into the middle of some kind of weird situation, and he inner monologues his way through, oh, they suspect me, I've never felt so terrified. Yes, this film breaks.
Oh, Jimmy Stewart was in it, was he?
Yeah, thank you very much. You have the cancer. Yeah, sorry.
Your Jimmy Stewart was better when you weren't trying. It's a bit like my Vincent Price.
So rude.
So obviously, yeah, I hadn't seen this before. I haven't seen any of the other Inner Sanctum. I will, maybe I'll wait till October when we do the mass Inner Sanctum thing. That would be a lot of fun. So I didn't know what was going on, and it's, what was it, 66 minutes long. And now, first time watch, I don't know about you, I'm waiting to see where the Pillow of Death comes in for 64 minutes.
For a film with such an arresting title, it's crazy that they chose that one element that you don't even really see, apart from right at the end, to be the film's title. And don't get me wrong, I think that title is the best thing about this film. Because it just makes you go, what?
What was the line you used before we pressed record?
The line is, though I 100% believe, this: the title passes checks that the film cannot cash.
Absolutely spot on. Yes. It really does. I mean, it's a belting title. It's such a schlocky title.
Just makes you go, what? Just like, I have to see that film. Pillow of Death? Absolutely. Yes, please.
And do you know what? I'm still sticking with that. I say people still have to see this film. You know, yeah, regardless of its failing. It's 66 minutes. You know, what else are you going to do? I mean, you can watch a Rathbone Sherlock Holmes in that time. That's fair enough, which is, you know, infinitely better. But it's still 66 minutes. You might as well just fritter away those, you know, have one less hour of sleep at night and watch Pillow of Death.
Yeah.
Because regardless of all its faults, and of which it has many.
Many.
It does have some really good... but it does have some really good positives.
It has has lots of good positives, yeah.
It does. And regardless of what you... regardless of how you feel about Lon Chaney Jr. being this type of character for the Inner Sanctum films, I really like him in this film.
Okay.
I do. For about 59 minutes, I actually quite like him.
Okay.
I do. I'm not beholden to anyone's opinion. This is my opinion.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. 59th minute is when his character just out of nowhere completely changes into someone else.
Yes. Now that's an issue.
It's one of many issues. Oh, we should probably give everyone an idea about what the film's about.
Yes.
Before we start talking about the story, because otherwise people are going, what? I don't know what you're talking about. So basically, Lon Chaney Jr. plays a character called Wayne Fletcher, and he's an attorney, and he is in love with his secretary, Donna, played by Brenda Joyce.
Well, who wouldn't be?
Yeah. So anyway, they get home from a date one night. And he delivers her home and gets home to, says, I'm going to have a showdown with my wife. I'm definitely going to get that divorce. And he goes home to do such a thing. And he finds the police in his house, the police and a medium called Julian, in his house. And they are there to tell him that his wife has been murdered. Now, it turns out that his wife was something of a fan of Julian. And I mean, the whole film.
I love him, the throwaway line of like women are. they're a fan of mediums like women are. I
thought, there's brilliant. So much casual sexism, and it's just all over the shop. But basically, the police think, despite the fact that he says I wasn't even here at the time, but somehow this medium who was here to discover the body, they don't say, it must be the medium then, throw him in prison. They throw the husband in prison, even though he has an alibi.
Yes.
Where were you between 7 and 10 this evening, Fletcher?
My office, working.
I suppose you can prove that.
Yes, someone was with me.
Who was it?
My secretary. But if there's any way of keeping her name out of this...
So it's a romance. Any chance you might have wanted your wife out of the way?
You're forgetting, McCracken, that I'm an attorney. I don't have to answer.
Sure, I know. You don't have to talk. I just thought you might want to be helpful. Julian here has been very helpful. He says you've been trying to get rid of your wife. He thinks you'd like to marry that young Kincaid girl.
Is that what this faker came here to tell you?
Not exactly. He says he came here to find out why your wife didn't keep an appointment at his studio. Says he phoned several times and nobody answered. Then he claims he had a psychic presentiment that something was wrong. So he came here. Couldn't get anybody to answer the doorbell, and he called headquarters. We found the body. Anything wrong with his story?
Plenty. He calls himself a psychic investigator. I don't know what his real name is. My wife met him about a year ago at one of those silly seances that women so often attend.
Silly to you, perhaps, Mr. Fletcher. But not to those who believe.
Was Mrs. Fletcher a believer?
She was more than that. She was that rare individual, a natural medium for communication with the spirit world.
So anyway, the whole film is, did Wayne kill his wife or not? Now, in this Inner Sanctum film, he doesn't get an inner monologue. No. And there is no face in the glass to begin. So it's already very different from the five that have come before it. There is a good reason for all of that, turns out later on. But the whole film is him trying to prove his innocence, trying to keep his relationship with Donna going. All the while, the police are trying to find evidence that he is the one who killed his wife. And then the rich household that Donna belongs to, which is the Kincaid household, people start dying there too, and they're all smothered to death.
Good.
By a pillow. The pillow of death.
Good.
And yeah, revelations will follow. There's a lot of fake mediums, there are secret passageways, there are voices in the darkness, and then there's this really madcap last 10 minutes. That's the story.
Mm-hmm. That is the story. But I'm glad you brought that up, though. Yeah, the Kincaid household, it's just a house full of wankers. They're all a complete asshole.
Don't you love who they are, though? So you got Clara Blandick as Belle, who's like the dotty aunt who wants to believe in psychic. She's Aunt Em from Wizard of Oz, so people who are Wizard of Oz fans will know her.
I've held my hands up before and say I've never seen The Wizard of Oz, but no, I have seen her in something else, but I'll look that up in a minute. But she... she is vile.
Yeah. Aunt Em, the sort of raging maiden aunt years. That's what this film should be called. And then you have George Cleveland as Sam Kincaid, who's kind of like this old man. He's like Colonel Sanders. He seems to be on Lon Chaney's side, but he also sadly meets his end. Then you have the great Rosalind Ivan as Amelia Kincaid. Now, we'll know her from Pursuit to Algiers and The Suspect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's one of these fabulous character actors. And what I love, say what you want about this film, but the character actors in it are fantastic. Clara Blandick, for all her faults, as a character, is superb as this horrible whirlwind woman. And then Rosalind Ivan is just amazing as Amelia. She's creeping around the corner, she's screwing her face up, and that's what I love about character actors. Like, everyone had such great faces back in that day, and they were all like, you know, I don't care about being a star, I just want to be the one that slithers around the doorway and says the sinister thing.
That's right? Awesome, isn't it? Well, Belle, I, because obviously I go to my, you know, what's my most available frame of reference, and my most available frame of reference for all Golden Age cinema is always going to be Harvey, because I adore that film so much. And Belle in this is if Josephine Hull had been evil.
Yes, like an evil Josephine Hull. Yeah, absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not being very helpful, are you?
What do you mean?
I know that you're in love with Fletcher and that he's in love with you.
I suppose Julian told you that.
Didn't have to. Fletcher tried his best to keep your name out of this. Tried to protect you.
That sounds like Wayne. A fine, upstanding fella.
Fine fellow indeed. Murdering his wife and dragging Donna's name into the case.
Wayne is not a murderer.
If you told me about this personal matter, it might help him. What was he going to talk to his wife about?
He was going to demand a showdown. Insist that she release him.
You see? He is a murderer.
Looks that way. But doesn't it strike you as strange that a man should go home to demand a showdown from a dead woman? By the way, what were you doing out this evening?
Who said I was out?
Headquarters had an anonymous phone call. Seems you very seldom go out after dark. One of your neighbors probably noticed you.
Nosy things.
Where were you?
I was visiting Vivian Fletcher.
Miss Belle, you shouldn't...
You keep out of this, Julian. Now, go ahead, Miss Kincaid. Why did you visit Mrs. Fletcher this evening?
To ask her to have him discharge Donna.
Did she agree?
Yes.
Was Mrs. Fletcher alive when you left?
Of course she was alive. She was about to take up dinner.
What time was that?
About 20 minutes to 7.
Was Mr. Fletcher home when you left?
His car was just pulling into the driveway when I said goodnight to Vivian. It was all very logical to me. She demanded that he discharge Donna, then he flew into a rage and killed her. Well, why don't you go ahead and hang the man, or whatever it is they do to murderers, instead of asking all these silly questions?
Sometimes logic leads to the wrong person.
Bosh! Why do you have to drag out the case and implicate us all in a lot of unpleasant publicity? You have the murderer in jail and you know it.
Maybe I have it there.
And she nails it. And she's really good. But I was so glad to see her die. In the film, not in real life. Yeah. I was just... I was, yeah. No, it was great. But But as you say, George Cleveland, I really liked his performance. I thought he was wonderful because he just, all he cares about is eating and pissing all over Julian. By the way, this film must have the most ridiculous sandwich ever seen on screen. Did you see that thing he sat down with?
No.
It was about... It's about 6 inches tall, if not more. He sits down on a plate, and the plate... It's like that.
That must have been one of the many times I nodded off.
His sister goes, "Here, look, if you eat that, you're not going to be able to sleep tonight." And he goes, "Oh, don't worry. If that's your only worry, I can sleep. Don't worry." And he tries to bite into it, and he can't even get like his mouth around a quarter of it. It's just... It's humongous. It's the biggest sandwich ever on film.
Good old Sam Kincaid and his sandwich. Sandwich Kincaid.
It's brilliant. there we go. Nicely done. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. The other thing that this film shows me, which I will have to bestow it the greatest ever, is the greatest ever lighting of a cigarette. This is by Lon Chaney Jr. Lighting of a cigarette with the match, flicks the match, and then obviously the voice of his dead wife suddenly appears in his head, and then flicks a cigarette as well. And it's the most panache I've ever seen, the flicking of a match and cigarette. And being a connoisseur myself, I was just sort of like, holy crap, I've still got a lot to learn. Lon Chaney Jr. is teaching me from beyond the grave. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, very suave. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No one flicked a fag like Lon Chaney Jr.
Good old Lon Chaney Jr. And that's not a euphemism.
No, it's not. In fact...
Can we return back to something you said earlier? What's your issue with the moustache?
Oh, he's just all moustache. Like, he just acts with his top lip in this whole film. It's like, everything he does is like... it's just all there. It's like, nothing... It's his eyes and moustache. It's just... All he is facial hair jumping around the screen. It's like watching a spider being electrocuted for 66 minutes.
Wow. There's a image for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. I don't hate Lon Chaney Jr. I just think he's totally wrong for these type of inner turmoil films where he has to emote, like, you know, but he's so physical. He's all shoulders and chest, you know, so face acting is either frantic or dead. And that's Lon Chaney Jr.
He looked quite a big lad. Was he at all?
He's just very beefy. He's like a big old boy.
Yeah. He was, wasn't he? But also, someone we haven't really talked about is J. Edward Bromberg.
Oh, I love him.
Isn't he brilliant?
He's so good in this. He's great in everything. Yeah. He's in so many Universal horror movies. And he got blacklisted, and he lost his life because of it as well. I think I'm right in saying, I did mention him.
Was it a Red Scare thing?
It was a Red Scare thing. I mentioned him in my, Hunting Witches of Walt Disney.
Of course.
Series, but he died of a heart attack after he'd been basically hounded out of Hollywood, and he'd been not just hounded out.
He was really young, wasn't he?
Really young, you know, like 40-something, 44, wasn't
he? 47, I've just...
47, heard. Okay. But he's so great in everything he's in. He's always the standout. He does great drama, and he was one of the Strasbourg students, so he's a really talented actor, really great at comedy as well, and just a lovely, lovely screen presence. He always plays like, you know, this sort of slimy asshole in films, but you just can't help but love him. And it's the same in this. He's one of these characters who's so punchable, but you get to the end and actually you're like, actually, I really like him. And his name's Julian, for God's sake.
but also, the way he breaks the fourth wall at the end of the film is an utter joy, which I loved. Well, I just read this on IMDb. And this is, forgive the term, this is heartbreaking. He said that he joined the Communist Party because it was the only party that was struggling for the 8 hours work, weekend for resting and better wages, working conditions, plans for retirement, and because of the age, etc.
I mean, I don't really want to get too political, but when someone sells that stuff to you, when someone says to you, you know, we're the movement that wants to give people more time with their families and stuff like this, and you go, sure. that sounds great, yeah, sign me up. And you go, yeah, great, we're called the Communist Party. And you go, oh. it's like sometimes, all parties have policies that they believe are great. I'm not going to get into politics, especially not in the world of today. But all parties.
4th of July is our Independence Day.
No, I don't think any party has policies that are purely evil. They all think they're doing the right thing.
No,
their people.
Well, so. Some. There was one very famously in the 40s.
Oh yeah, but they're thankfully not around.
Well. Some parts of the United States.
No politics. But yes, anyway.
Let me just say this. I can't remember who said it, but I remember reading something, and they said that the Communist Party had some all right ideas, but it was just never going to work.
No. I must admit, when I went into writing Hunting Witches with Walt Disney, which is a series I made about communism back in like 2014 or something or other, I didn't even really understand what communism was. I didn't really understand what the Communist Party was, but I knew that was an important chapter of Hollywood history. So I sat there and I learned about what it was. And I thought to myself, there's lots of this stuff I like. Lots of this stuff I don't like. I don't like indoctrination. I don't like, I don't like the fact that in order for communism to work, you basically have to snap your fingers and hope that everyone suddenly agrees with you. Because if people do want to work for themselves and they want to put things by for themselves, then that's okay too. So there's tons of it I don't agree with. For the Communist Manifesto to work, basically everyone just has to suddenly think, instead of working for this, you have to work for the greater good. And that's never going to be a workable solution for humanity.
Certainly not in the 21st century anyway. No. It's a little akin, this is a little aside, but it's a little akin to when I was younger. I was in my early 20s and I was searching for a religion. I was really wanting to find something that suited me. I knew Christianity wasn't for me, and that's how I became interested in the Church of Satan. I found it very interesting. And the Church of Satan is nothing to do with the devil. It's just, it's basically it's a hedonistic religion. And I was into it for a short time, but the more I learned, this was my point. I would say I'm not in it anymore. I haven't been for a very long time now. It's over 20 years. That they had some great ideas and they have some great philosophies, but it just wasn't for me.
Hmm.
And it's exactly the same with communism, though. Great ideas, well, some great ideas.
Some great ideas.
But it's not feasible.
Hmm.
And I think it, but when you've got this, this lad that, a great actor who, and he has a heart attack because of the stress from.
Hmm.
The Red Scare and being blacklisted. I mean,
that's awful. Do you know that series I made, Hunting Witches Walt? I don't think I've listened to it for about 8-9 years now. And I keep saying to myself, I must go back and redo that one.
Cause I listened to it last year.
Did you? Oh, bless you.
Again.
That's the one series I haven't gone back to because I remember how much it upset me when I made it. And I was like, it absolutely destroyed so many people.
Correct me if I'm wrong. No. I just want to go through this. This is our show. We can do what the hell we want. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but the end of that series, the Hunting Witches, is where you play the bit at the Oscars when Chaplin's getting his honorary.
That's right. Yeah.
And you highlight the fact of which modern day stars refused to applaud Chaplin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. That was Elia Kazan you're thinking of. But yes,
I was Elia Kazan.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It bears weight. That shows you everything you need to know. What you pointed out, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass, right? It's, I mean, that's a really weird mindset to still keep, having.
Mm.
I always thought that was really strange.
I think the Chaplin was wrongly accused of being a communist, but Elie Kazan, I think that the people refused to applaud him because he testified, and he did shot people. I mean, it's such a thorny, tangled grey area. You can understand why people didn't applaud him, but you can also, you have to say to yourself as well, God. I mean, it's so hard to put context. And we're talking about Pillar of Death 1945.
You're right. We went on a massive tangent.
So, but J. Edward Bromberg, anyway, I do talk about him in that series. And one of my main takeaways from his career was that he was very unfairly treated and died horribly young because of it. So, yeah, that's why we've taken such a tangent. He's such a great actor. I love him.
Yeah. Hey, look, we as I say, we can do what we want. But personal politics aside, or whatever your feelings about any of the whole Red Scare or the wonderful, you know, the things you played of Dalton Trumbo, who, you know, a lot of people have issues with, but I actually quite like. And you ever watched the movie with Bryan Cranston?
Yeah.
Playing him. I thought he nailed it.
Mm, yeah, he did, yeah. It's great. Yeah. Dalton Trumbo's a great.
Absolutely fantastic.
He's great. I really like him. I really like him as a person.
I remember... you may not. This could be a really weird tangent, but there's a song by Metallica called "One," and it's all based on Trumbo's book.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, but it's all based on Trumbo's book of Johnny Got His Gun, and after reading about that, that's what they based it on, and they include clips from the film in the music video. I went and bought the book of Johnny Got His Gun. And I don't know what I was like, 16, 17 at the time. It's not a book that you read at that age. Not only is it disturbing stuff, as you so rightly say, but it's a book with very little punctuation. So, because that's what you just like to do. And I was just reading it going, hang on, I don't understand half of this. So, yeah, it's there, like, make your mind up time.
There's a great, Arch Obler did a series of plays, and he was like this real outside thinker when it came to radio. He was like pushing the boundaries of it, like Orson Welles tried to do in film. But Arch Obler did a series called Arch Obler's Plays, and James Cagney starred in an adaptation of Johnny Got His Gun for Arch Obler, and it's really worth listening to. It is on the internet, so you should look for it. It's really good. But yeah, it's fantastic.
I can imagine it's quite harrowing.
Yeah, it's very harrowing, but yeah.
Archer. Anyway, yeah. Pillow of Death.
Yes, Pillow of Death. Back to the nonsense.
Okay, so we have Donna Kincaid, who has been... They're actually quite ambiguous about her relationship with Wayne. I mean, as you said, he's sort of saying, oh, I'm going to leave my wife for him, my wife for you. But Donna seems more interested in being his secretary than a lover. They only have 66 minutes to do it, but they never properly flesh out their relationship. They really fly through it. But then they fly through everything in this. I wonder if you watch this on, like, I don't know, 1.5 speed, you could get this done in about 35 minutes. And I wonder if it would make any difference at all.
It would probably feel longer.
All right.
Somehow.
So... That was fine. Oh, something I did make note of, which I thought you would be a bit in your plus column. The amount of wonderful newspaper headlines that get thrust onto the screen, because I know you're a fan.
It's great.
Yeah.
I love them. Yeah, I did notice that as well. They just fly out every 5 seconds. New killing, new suspect. Charles Kincaid slain. Sam Kincaid slain. Belle Kincaid slain. New suspect in police investigation.
Should point out, though, for Universal Horror, every single killing happens off screen.
Yeah. As Universal Horror goes,
come on.
This is bottom tier, isn't it?
Although saying that, I was just looking up J. Edward Bromberg. He was in the Claude Rains Phantom of the Opera. And that's a bottom tier Universal Horror.
It really is. Yeah. He's also an Invisible Agent, which is...
Oh, I haven't seen
which
that.
Is the way they tried to reboot The Invisible Man for Universal Horror, but with like a war slant to it. And he plays this German officer who's trying to seduce the heroine, and the Invisible Man's in the room, and he just like keeps kicking him up the bum and putting pies on his chair and things like that. It's like total comedy, and he's playing a Nazi officer, you know, and it's like the height of the Cold War, the Nazi sort of, you know, hatred phase of Hollywood, and there he is playing this bumbling Nazi who's sitting in a pie, you know, and having his bum kicked and trousers pulled down and things like that. It's like, I love him, God bless him, but it's slightly ill-judged.
But there's a limit.
Yeah, nowadays. It's funny, but come on.
Yeah, that's not good. The thing with this, as we say, it's just over an hour long.
Mm.
People start dying. And actually, something we didn't mention is that we sort of say that towards the end of the film is that Lon Chaney switches very, very quickly from being, you know, quite cool, calm and collected into a kind of
drooling
nut job.
Yeah.
However, he's not the only one that happens to.
Right.
Because it happens to Amelia as well.
Yes. Yep.
Amelia! Amelia!
What is it?
Open the door, Amelia. We're locked in.
Sure you are. I locked you in.
You what?
I locked you in. Poor Mr. Julian's locked up for murder. He's innocent and nobody believes him. And I put him in the gas chamber. Now I've got you locked in. And you'll die. There never would have been a murder but for you. You're evil. Both of you evil.
Don't be such a fool, Amelia. Open the door.
Oh, no. Wayne Fletcher killed his wife and Sam and Belle. And they'll kill poor Mr. Julian with gas. Gas? Gas? I know what I'll do. I'll fetch a gas tube from downstairs. And I'll attach it here in the hall and run it under the door. And then you'll die just as Mr. Julian's going to die.
She sounds like she's crazy.
I also...
You know, she...
Yeah, go on.
No, no, I'm just saying, well, because she's quite stern and steady at the start. Mm. Oh, that was a lot of alliteration. And also, yeah, the anti-English sentiment at the beginning of this film, I should point out as well. Yeah, oh, the English were so frivolous with our money that they now have none, and this is why she's in America. It's like, oh, all right, turn it down. And but she goes from being, you know, sort of closely guarded and quite dismissive of people to just an unhinged loon.
Yeah,
in the space of about, I don't know, 90 seconds.
The problem with this film is that it's all very intriguing and it's all very, I don't know, it's kind of logical up until about the hour mark. And then all of a sudden they just go, well, no, we need an ending. So I don't care if you have another 40 pages. Or I want it to end in 6 pages. So they just, it's like it goes on to fast forward. So as you say, Amelia Kincaid, Rosalind Ivan, just turns into this just total nut job. So does Lon Chaney Jr., I think we need to talk about the last act of the film, because all the way through, there's this psychic angle, isn't there? Julian keeps holding these seances, or as Lon Chaney Jr. calls them, seances. And you hear the dead wife, you know, I can't remember her name. Anyway, the wife he has supposedly murdered, she's talking and she's saying, oh, you know, Wayne killed me. Don't believe anything else. He killed me.
Yeah.
And you are thinking, well, it's all fake. And he's saying, oh, no, it's a fake thing. In the last 5 minutes, you come to realise that actually it's not fake. And she really has been trying to communicate from the grave. And he is the baddie.
Yeah.
So Lon Chaney Jr. turns out to have actually been the villain. So he's calm and collected and totally, you know, lawyerish all the way through. And then all of a sudden, there's this moment about 5 minutes before the end where she says, you know, you did kill me, didn't you? And he goes, yes, I did. And then all of a sudden, he sort of turns into this, as you say, drooling lunatic. And then he tries killing Donna. And then he leaps out of a window to his death. And you do think to yourself, what? But it does explain the fact that they didn't put any inner monologue in, because this is the only film in the Inner Sanctum series where he turns out to have actually been guilty. And not just that, there turns out to have actually been a supernatural something that turned out to be true, because in all the other films, it turns out that it's someone pulling the strings or someone framing him, and then he walks off into the sunset. But in this one, there's no inner monologue, and you go, why isn't there an inner monologue? That's because all the way through, he would have been going, actually, I'm guilty.
Yeah. His wife's name is Vivian, by the way.
That's Vivian.
Yeah. I had to look it up, but because I couldn't remember for the life of me. But yeah, but it's weird. I mean, again, first time watch of it, and you're sort of going, well, hang on. So is his wife really connecting with Julian? Is it all in his head? Is it all fakery? Because they have the interloper for Donna's affections, you know, he's creeping around in the walls, which is a really weird plot line.
So worrying.
Yeah. And also, I'm going to stick my neck out here. I think the biggest crime of this film is putting him and Donna together at the end.
I know. Right. The way he comes out of the wall at one point, she says, "What are you doing on my wall?" And he says, "Look, shut up. I need to be allowed to be in your wall so I can be close to you whenever I want." And it's like, hang on a minute. Who thinks that's an okay thing to say? Like, you know, I should be allowed to crawl around in your walls because when I want to be close to you, I should be allowed to be close to you. So just put up with it, please. It's so weird.
Yeah, but it's also the fact that right at the end, they what's his name? Bruce, isn't it?
Bruce, yeah.
And he's not a Bernard, but or Bernard Bernard Thomas. I'm not familiar with, but.
Funny that.
He also... Yeah. Sorry?
Funny that.
Yeah, well, I didn't know if you were. I didn't know if it was someone I'd missed. But he doesn't even have a picture on IMDb. Bless him. But also, not only does he justify, as you so rightly say, that he's been hiding in the walls and spying on everyone as, oh, I'm just trying to protect you, so it actually makes it all right. He also steals Wayne's wife and hides her in a secret passageway.
Yeah. Just...
And this is the good guy?
It's so weird, this film, because it's so... like, the moral compass of this film is so all over the place. If I was a policeman investigating a killing in which the husband had an alibi, I would say, who else could have been here? What, the medium that found her? Maybe he's the guy. Maybe, you know, there's no... some of the... conclusions that the policeman jumps to. Oh, by the way, the policeman's called Captain McCracken. I just love the fact that. Oh, it's so bad. And I mean, it's just as a script, it's toilet paper, isn't it? It's so bad. It's so when like some of the things they say to each other, some of the way the scenes end, it's just like, well, surely it could be J. Edward Bromberg who's the one that's killed my wife, and it ends with the policeman sort of fourth walling going maybe. And then it sort of screen wipes. And it ends with that so many times. Or maybe it could have been him then because I wasn't here. Yeah, sure. Screen wipe. And it's like, how is this policeman so dumb? There are five other people I would have brought in before lunch. Oh, so bad. Yeah, so bad.
I had to look at my list because McCracken... Captain McCracken. I recognised him. I never know where. So I always have to consult my list. So Wilton Graff is his name. And we saw him. When we guested, was it last year, on the Ballyhoo, and we talked about The Web, he was in that.
Yep, he was in The Web, you're right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, nice to see him again.
He's in lots of good things.
Yeah,
he's in Strange Confession as well, which is another Inner Sanctum film. God bless his heart. Terrible actor.
Yeah, but he had a thankless task in this one, though.
Really did, yeah.
You seem greatly interested in convicting Wayne Fletcher, Miss Kincaid.
Why shouldn't I be? Donna was a normal, happy girl until she started working for him. Now look at her. Willful, stubborn. And instead of having her eyes opened by the tragedy, she imagines she's in love with this murderer.
Aunt Belle, what are you doing here?
Telling the truth in the interest of justice.
Sit down, Miss Kincaid. Why'd you lie to me last night, Fletcher?
I suppose you're referring to the time element. Donna just reminded me that I didn't arrive at the office until a couple of minutes past 7:15. I guess that clinches the case, doesn't it?
It might.
Let's stop kidding, McCracken. You know you haven't enough evidence to hold me. Now, shall I send my secretary back to the office to draw up a writ of habeas corpus? Or are you going to release me now?
I'm going to let you go, Fletcher.
What? You can't possibly mean that.
I do. You see, all the evidence I have against him is purely circumstantial. Like the evidence I have against you.
Me? You must be crazy.
Not at all. You admit that you called on Mrs. Fletcher last evening. And I have only your word for it that Fletcher arrived home just as you were leaving. By the way, Fletcher, did you see Miss Kincaid leaving your house when you came home to dinner?
No, I didn't.
You see?
I do like that line, though, when he sort of... You know, gets hold of Julian. And he sort of says, "Come on, what's your real name?" He says, "No, it's Julian." Or he's like, "Fine, what's your surname?" Is it Julian?
Your name is Julian. Julian. Yes. Shrug.
No, he goes. You're in a rut, which is a great line.
dearie me.
Mm.
So yeah, but I mean that's it. The film ends with J.O. Bromberg breaking the fourth wall of saying abracadabra is an anathema, and it was like, is that that's how you're going to end?
Really
it?
Killer line, son. Yeah, well done.
It's going to be people going. Now, where's my dictionary? So don't. You can imagine people in the cinema going, what? And the credits roll.
Goodbye, Captain McCracken.
Goodbye, Julian. I owe you a vote of thanks for helping us expose Fletcher. That psychic abracadabra of yours is quite a thing.
My dear fellow, the word abracadabra is anathema to the true believer in the occult.
It definitely ended. I mean, it killed the series. And it did it in a way that I don't think anyone would have said, oh no, I want more. I think that seems to have been this film's job, to have killed the series so dead that no one asked for more, because I don't think anyone sort of said, oh, the Inner Sanctum series wasn't that great. They started off really well and quite stylish, and they just sort of declined. But then this one, I think it has such a beautifully trashy B-movie title. That you just want it to succeed, and when you watch it, you're just like, oh, this is not doing it.
You were so close.
Yeah. It really is. The best thing about this film is the title.
If you could recommend someone for their first Inner Sanctum film, what would you go for?
Weird Woman.
Rightio. Because I haven't seen that, so it's good, that'll be my next one to go
for. It's got Evelyn Anchors in it as well, and it's about... Lon Chaney is a professor, of course, and he goes away to South Seas island and brings back a native girl and marries her, and her name's Paula, I think, or something like that. It's one of these Western names that, you know, it doesn't matter. She's from a South Seas island. Her name's Paula. And she comes back, and she's very sort of mystical and everything, and all of a sudden strange things start happening. Like, she starts chanting at night, and then his enemies start dropping like flies, and you think, ooh, God, she's putting curses on them, and it turns out there's a whole other thing happening. It's the best one. It's been remade a few times. Burn, Witch, Burn, I think, was the...
Oh, of course, yes, you mentioned that, yes.
Gotcha. It's really good.
Right. Well,
it's good.
It's definitely one I will be checking out. All right, mate. I went first last time because you were very happy about that. So you're going first this time. So some final thought and rating on Pillow of Death.
I think as a film on its own, I'd probably say a 2 or 3 because it's just very boring. There are so many plot lines that just don't add up to anything. And then you get to the end, you're like, what? So if you started with this one, you would just be like, I don't, why was this thing made? It's not even a great B movie, let alone movie. But in the context of the Inner Sanctum series, if you've watched the 5 before it and you get to this one, you're like, why isn't there an inner monologue? That's an interesting way it took the ending, because all of the others were mysteries framed as supernatural mysteries, but turned out to be just plain mysteries at the end. This one is a plain mystery with this sort of hokey medium stuff thrown in that turned out to be an actual supernatural mystery at the end, because the wife is actually haunting him, and she calls him to his death and all that stuff. So what I remember about this film is the fact that those elements are in it, and the fact that she calls him to his death at the end, and he leaps out into her arms and goes to his doom. And there's fun little asides like J.O. Bromberg and the whole this is probably the greatest facial hair acting I've ever seen on change. So in the context of the series, I would probably give it a 4 or a 5, but as a film on its own, probably a 3. So I'll say a 3, but in the context of the Inner Sanctum series, a 5. You go.
Okie dog. Okay, well, I'm going to contradict you slightly, which is that this is my first Inner Sanctum film. At least I think it is. I'll need to actually check that, but I think it is. And I'm not gonna lie, I enjoyed this. It was 66 minutes of silly fun, and it started well with the bickering siblings and, you know, chastising Donna for going out with a married man and whatnot. And I enjoyed that sort of family dynamic. And then you bring in Lon Chaney Jr. with his wonderful cigarette throwing and a remarkable facial hair. And you just have these wonderful character actors bouncing off each other for a little bit. And I must admit, I enjoyed that. It got far too confusing with the, you know, is it all in his head or is she really a ghost? And then you have the medium saying, oh, no, I'm real. And then he's going, well, no, you're not, because you've got Bruce hiding in a cupboard. And then it turns out that he didn't know Bruce was there, but that the wife's voice was there anyway. It's all very odd. And oh, there's actually, we didn't mention, there's another seance later on.
Mm.
Or seance, as you say.
Seance, yeah.
Seance, where he hears a voice that only he can hear, Julian I'm talking about, where the Belle has to keep believing in the paranormal and the supernatural and you know, stick with it because it's doing her well. And it was like, well, where did that come from? Why was that there? Because that wasn't needed at all.
No, it's because...
Yeah, so that was bonkers.
It's because at one point she's thinking of sort of shutting the house up.
I know, but...
And Jerry Rombo's character makes it up so that she will keep finding him.
I know, but it's so stupid. But this isn't a masterpiece. I would, though, as I said earlier, you know, you've got an hour to kill. You could do a hell of a lot worse than watching Pillow of Death. So I'm sticking with it, mate. I don't care. I don't care what anyone says. I am teetering, and I know I am teetering between a 6 and a 7 because I really
be generous. Give it a 7. Go on.
Go on in. I'll be generous. I'm giving this a 7. Yeah. Pillow of Death is a 7 because I tell you what, it's a 6, but the title pushes it up a point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There you go. So fair enough. That's how I'm going to rate Pillow of Death. And in fact, I'll tell you what, I'm going to rate this on IMDb right now. 7. There we go. That's going to push its point up. It's on a 6.0 out of 10 on IMDb. So from 800 people who have rated it. So,
well, I am surprised. I think it's the first time you've ever gone this much higher than me for a film.
Mm. I might have gone higher than you on The Black Sleep, I think. But I can't remember properly. But there we go. So anyway, that was The Pillow of Death. Now, for you listeners, Adam texted me a week or two ago and said that he had found the next film for All the Best Lines.
Mm.
And so I'm back. I don't even need to offer an option. Adam has already decided, and I'm more than willing to watch what he's going for. So, my friend, what are we watching next?
So, this is a film that I've loved since the first time I saw it. Not because of... because of, actually... I was utterly absorbed by it. And it's a film I reviewed very early on in Attaboy Clarence. And every now and then I think to myself, this will be a great one for All the Best Lines because it's one of the most divisive films I've ever seen.
Ooh.
Like,
more than Pillow of Death.
100%. Everyone agrees with me on Pillow of Death. Everyone seems to love this film until a certain point. And then everyone's opinion of it either goes one way or the other. So this is a 1944 film noir directed by Fritz Lang, starring Edward G. Robinson, Joan Bennett, Raymond Massey, and Dan Duryea. And anyone who's seen this will already be screaming the name of it. It's called The Woman in the Window. And it's one of the best suspense thrillers ever. And that's all I'm going to say about it for now. Because if you haven't seen it, don't let anyone spoil it for you. Watch it. You will be enthralled. And then when you come away at the end, you will either have one opinion or the other. So, that's the film.
I've just put Woman in the Window in...
you probably got the 2021 film.
Amy Adams movie.
Yeah. I mean, that's
which
not...
I watched.
That's not a remake. This is...
Oh, good. Because that was...
No, this is...
I love Amy Adams, as you know, but no, that was bad.
The Woman in the Window from 1944. Go in blind, completely give yourself over to it, and I can't wait to see what you think.
Oh, sorry, I just read the synopsis, but I'll stop there. I won't go any further.
Don't.
Okay, all right, Woman in the Window is coming next. Mm. We haven't done it for this long, so...
No. And this is a film I don't necessarily need you to love, but I'm very intrigued to know... What you think?
Is this going to get us in trouble like His Girl Friday did?
No, because there was
good.
Everyone has an opinion. When the film finishes, you will have an opinion. You'll say, "Oh my god, that film, absolutely terrible. Or you'll say, oh my God, that film, masterpiece. And I don't think anyone will hate the other person for thinking differently. Oh. And you'll see why. You'll see why at the end.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's I can't wait to watch it. Mm. Wonderful.
It's really good.
I may even watch it today.
Please don't spoil it by reading anything about it. Just watch it.
No, no.
Completely virgin. And
I've already forgotten the synopsis. So. Cool.
And make sure you watch every single frame and stay glued to it, because everything is important.
Rightio. Okay. Oh, it's one of those thinkers.
It's beautiful. I can't wait to see what you think.
I can do that. Okay, brilliant, wonderful. I'm looking forward to it. All right, well, that'll be the next episode. Well, as always, lovely to be back and chatting nonsense films with you. Pillow of Death, it had to be done.
It did, and we've done it.
Never to be spoken of again. Wonderful. All right, my friend. Well, next time with Woman in the Window. Until then. All the best.
2420 Ciolunis asteroids, which were identified in 1975.
In Lithuania?
By renowned Lithuanian art composer Michailas Konstantinas Ciolunis. Lines!
I did wonder where you were going there.
This show would be so tight if I was editing, by the way.
You.
We'd be finished by now. Anyway, Smokey's editing. We don't mind.
She sounds like she's crazy.